everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, looks like the monsoon is in our rearview mirror. We're going to talk a lot about that with our University of Arizona climate scientist at 12:30.
That may be true, but apparently summer has decided to hang around a little longer.
Excessive heat, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it is that time of year. It can really warm up here as we start to dry out. It's Wednesday. It is the 4th of September, 2024. Hope everybody had a great Labor Day weekend. I'm back after a few days off. My only advice to people after a very, let's just call it a challenging weekend, when you're going to get the new COVID shot, which I did and do recommend for people, but when they tell you, how are you feeling today? So, you know, they always say, are you well today? Saturday.
They're asking this before they administer the shot?
Yeah, they always ask that, even when you get a flu shot. Any shot, Tom, they always ask, are you well? Steve Christie's with me in studio. You know that, Steve. Mm-hmm. That's routine. Yeah. Well, I rarely these days get a cold, but I did wake up Saturday morning. Oh, my gosh. Just sort of a just not kind of feeling right. So I said, I'm okay right now. That's what I said to the people they gave the shot. Well, that was probably not. I should have waited. But anyway, weathered it. They say the doctors actually like you to have, Steve, what they call a robust reaction to the shots.
Well, I understand from what you're telling me, you had one of those.
Yeah, I did. We're in our 15th year. We'll be in January on the Buckmaster Show, coming from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 KVOI. That's The Voice. We are part of the Bustos Media Company, 5 radio stations under one roof. You can listen to the program and listen to all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Republican Steve Christie is the lone Republican on the 5 members of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, which oversee the business of Pima County. Of course, Mr. Christie, former well-known owner of a very popular car dealership. He is standing for his third 4-year term, and we welcome him back to the show. Well, how was your Labor Day weekend?
Oh, it was great. We had a good gathering of family and did all the traditional things and really enjoyed ourselves.
Up on Mount Lemmon, which is part of your district. Actually, I pulled some statistics about your district. It's large. Mm-hmm. It runs from Green Valley along the eastern section of Pima County, including Vail, parts of Tucson's east side, then all the way up to the Mount Lemmon area. So you of course, welcome following what's going on up there. I'm just curious. We had, and we'll talk more about this with our climate guy at 12:30, but looks like we had a pretty much right on average in Tucson, monsoon rainfall-wise. How did they do up on the mountain?
Well, they had a great rainfall season. By the way, my district also goes from the east side of I-19 all the way to the Cochise County border.
What? So really?
It's pretty substantial, as you pointed out. But getting back to the rain up at Mount Lemmon, the sources that we use, of course, are the Pima County flood control gauges. And during the official monsoon season, Mount Lemmon enjoyed 10.6 inches of rain.
That is good.
And year to date, their precipitation has been 19.8 inches.
Whoa. So nearly 20 inches. No wonder it looks so green now.
And it soaked in good, and the tanks are full, and the aquifer is up, and the streams are running, and it's a real paradise up there with all this rainfall.
And people are going up there and enjoying the overnight stay.
Yeah, I heard folks went up over the holiday, and they said it was jam-packed. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about it in a staff meeting. It's just a mere 5-6 years ago, the businesses up there were complaining about lack of business and lack of profitability and sales. Now it's just the opposite. It's almost to the point where they are having too much business, yeah. And their business is so good as things have changed and evolved up there in such a positive manner.
How about their first responder community up there?
Oh, we're really excited about that. They've got, of course, a terrific fire department and water district, and they all work together.
They have their own...
That's the Mount Lemmon Fire District and mm-hmm. the Mount Lemmon Water District, and they work hand in hand. Just last weekend, they broke ground on their new fire department station house. So that's going to take about a year. It's been in the works and in the planning stages for, 5, 6, 7 years. So we're expecting probably a year's completion before the new mm-hmm. facility is opened up. There's going to be some construction up there. The fire department and the staffing up there is all prepared for it. They've found alternate quarters to house themselves during the construction, and they took sledgehammers to the old wall, and it was a great ceremony, and everybody is just really excited about the new facility.
So let's talk a little bit. Are you regretting you were the lone dissenting vote on the heat ordinance, and now what do we have? An excessive heat warning today.
Well, it's not as if we haven't had one in the past, or the past years, the past decades, or the past century. My feeling is, yes, we have to be very respectful of extreme heat and hot temperatures, and certainly any employer who cares about his or her employees would make sure that there's adequate protection for their employees, especially in today's job market. You know, you just can't make a phone call and get somebody to be hired overnight or replace someone who's left you. So you want to take care and nurture and protect your employees and give them a great, positive, healthy working environment. But on the other hand, it's putting a lot of stress. This heat ordinance is putting a lot of stress and strain on employers who are struggling to provide the services and the products that their mission in business is all about. A lot of the issues that we've been talking about and on your show as well with some of my colleagues, they don't seem to talk about the punitive effects of this heat ordinance, the setting up of a snitch line that employees can use, the off-site training for heat ordinance matters. Whenever you take your employees and you have to go into training, either off-site or in-house, it's taking away your attention from your position there in the retail end. It's costing you business. It's costing you opportunities to sell things because your people are tied up in training, and it could be anywhere from a few hours to a couple of days.
And boy, but you've heard on this show, and we had Dr. Hines, what was it, a week or so ago, he believed this is one of the most important ordinances we've ever had here.
Well, Dr. Hines has never run a business. He's never had to hire anybody, and he's never had to meet a payroll. So he doesn't understand what it is like to train, recruit, and retain employees, as well as to face all the challenges and the hurdles of inflation and sales and all of the elements that are involved in running a business. So some of the issues that are they have whistleblower protection. So, you know, any disgruntled employee or ex-employee or a competitor can snitch on a business, and the punitive effects, apparently the health department's going to swoop down on employers and inspect their books and inspect their practices. And if they find any issues that they don't think comply with the heat ordinance, they're going to be coming down on these businesses and making them do all sorts of very disruptive activities that will really hurt their businesses. We've had heat here for centuries. We've had hot summers for centuries. Yes, it is hot. You must respect the heat, and we must provide shelter for those who are unable to provide it for themselves. I'm very sensitive to that. But there is a lot of common sense that goes along with living in the desert and living in Pima County, and that is that when it gets hot, you take certain steps to make sure that you're prepared to deal with the heat.
Did you do that when you owned the dealership?
Well, absolutely. And I was one of those that was out there doing the business of trying to deal with the heat. I can remember during college vacations in the middle of summer, my sales manager would come out and say, see those 50 cars over there in that parking lot? We need them moved over to the other side of the parking lot. And this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of July. And you'd get in these cars that were sitting there baking in the sun with all the chrome and the windows and the tires and the asphalt. And you get in there, you burn your hand on the handle, you burn your butt on the seat. And you had to be very careful and very cognitive of what it was to deal with these heat ordinances. But we all did it. And we all look at construction people and roofers and yard landscapers. They all have abilities to deal with the heat. And if things get to the point where it gets too hot, you take a break and you get under the shade and you regain yourself and then you go out and do it again. So I think there's some sort of a nationwide plan, because you can't open a newspaper and you can't look at any kind of media without there's some story about extreme heat and more deaths and fatalities that are being caused by this heat. This is nothing new to us, and I think anybody who knows Pima County and anybody who's lived here for a while knows how to deal with the heat.
How does this exactly, though, hurt the heat ordinance? How does that hurt the business?
Well, as I say, the punitive effects, the training effects that they're going to insert in all of these mandates, again, if a disgruntled employee doesn't like what an employer has said or done, or they call you up, call up the health department. The health department investigates the complaint. Just the investigation itself is going to be disruptive, and there are enough disruptions for businesses that have to deal with the day-to-day ongoing flow of their workflow. This is really an overreach of the federal government. It's an overreach of the county government. OSHA is supposed to come out with some sort of a plan to deal with this. And my second question is, if OSHA is going to be putting some into this, then why does Pima County Health Department?
All right, we're going to pause right here. We've still got a lot of ground to cover with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. It's the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. When we do our live line, it's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. My, oh my, where does the time go? It's already 20 minutes past 12, and I really have only covered, we covered the Mount Lemmon, had a good rain with, we covered the heat ordinance, and a lot of folks are still had questions about it, like what. We'll make this real quick. Like, what is the? Why do we need the heat ordinance? Someone brought this up during the break. What is not being done now that would require this? And make it real quick.
Well, right now, of course, the ordinance only covers Pima County employees and contractors who want to do business with Pima County employees. My question is, haven't they been concerned about the heat situation with their employees before now? Hmm. And if not, then something's wrong with their supervision and their ability to take care of their employees. And I can't believe that they'd still be in business if that was the fact. And on top of that, every business must, in this new plan, must file a plan, a heat ordinance plan, with the Pima County Health Department. That is a very debilitating thing. They have to stop what you're doing, file a plan, make sure it's adequate, and then submit it to the Pima County Health Department.
All right, another story. Pima County should consider downsizing or closing 5 of the 27 libraries across the region, including maybe the main branch downtown. This is part of a cost-saving report from the library system.
Well, libraries are evolving, and we need to recognize that. There's the old model of the neighborhood library, like I grew up, the Himmel Park branch, which I spent a lot of time during my years at Sam Hughes Elementary School.
Sit in one of the little chairs?
Yeah, that was just...
I remember sitting in one of the little chairs back in Wilmette, Illinois.
That was just last week for me, but it was a whole different environment than just a... another utilization that is no longer really applicable to today's high-tech and internet issues, where you can get books on demand over the internet or order them overnight. What they've seemed to have evolved into is some sort of a center for social services. We are hearing that they have a staffing issue, and I think a lot of that issue is a result that staff don't really want to have or don't feel compelled to have to deal with folks who are frequenting the library now that have mental health issues, that have drug addiction issues, or any kind of homeless issues. That they're finding those folks in those communities and with those issues, they're finding that libraries are a very convenient place just to come in and sit down and basically take over the library. And that's not a very family-friendly oriented type of environment, and not only for patrons but for employees. So the way that we apparently are being told by the library board as well as by county administration is they want to look very closely at the purpose of libraries and are they still to be utilized in the same mode that they have been for decades? Maybe there's some other function or some other goal or mission that the facilities can provide, but they certainly don't have the same kind of effort for the old-style library that we knew as young people growing up. So I think the staffing issue, I think the cost issue, we've got a lot of libraries, and maybe there could be some consolidation. There probably is still a demand by the community for the traditional library role, but unfortunately it's becoming more and more evolving into other areas that really don't fit the library mode.
Including apparently the signature, the downtown is kind of your signature library. That's who knows what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
That's the Joel
Valdez.
Valdez mm-hmm. main library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look at it out of my office all the time, and I wonder what kind of utilization it has. I wonder.
From what I'm hearing, you think actually this is a healthy look at the
library.
Well,
absolutely. Again, going back to my business days, we were always looking at ways of cutting expenses and costs. And if there were issues such as, dead ends that we had in our operation that didn't need to be there, we looked at ways of terminating them. And this same kind of philosophy should always be applying in Pima County government and looking at ways to save the taxpayers' money. And one of those ways may very well be effective by reducing libraries, closing libraries, or repurposing them for some other issue that could make up for cost savings in other areas.
We haven't talked about the third item that I wanted to get into. We talked about heat ordinance, the libraries. What about apparently migrant services will be getting a boost, almost $19 million.
Yep, and it looks like we're going to be in the asylum-seeking business for another better part of a year, if not more than a year.
Do we have any choice?
We certainly do, and that choice is what I've been putting forward for 5 years now, at least, is that we do not need to be in the asylum-seeking business. We need to close our facilities, the Drexel Road and the Ajo Way former youth detention center that's now Casas Elitis. We need to stop letting it be known that we have welcoming centers or transition centers. We need to stop acting as travel agencies for folks coming in to Pima County that we don't maybe release them into our streets, but we're releasing them into the streets of other communities across the country. I think that's just as bad as bringing them into the country in the first place. And everybody says, well, they're going to keep coming here regardless if we're open or not. No, they won't. They are like any other entity, migrants. They want to find the least place of resistance or the place of least resistance. And if we're closed, they're going to have to find something else or stop coming over altogether. They shouldn't, as particularly at this time of the year, be crossing the desert, and that word should be set out around the world. Stay out of the deserts now. Don't come to Pima County. We're not a welcoming center. We're not an entryway into any kind of asylum-seeking process, and we need to shut down our facilities.
So you're saying that a desert community shouldn't be really... the message is kind of mixed there, right? Don't cross the desert.
Well, certainly. but I think that message really applies to all of our borders, that we need to get a handle on illegal immigration and to make sure that we know that who's coming in is being held accountable and that they're going to be tracked and followed. And it's really gotten out of hand. And the money that's gone through, and with all that kind of money, that there's going to be a lot of those dollars slipping through people's fingers somewhere along the line.
I want to also see if we can work this item in. City Council now looking like they're going to do a new half-cent sales tax vote in March, right before perhaps the RTA next vote in May.
Probably so people don't notice that there's a tax issue in March rather than in November or August things. That's kind of like a Damoclean sword being hung over everybody's head, that if we don't get our way on the RTA, according to the city of Tucson, hey, we've got our own tax thing that we're going to be proposing.
Well, you contended all along the city's just not bought into the RTA thing.
I've contended all along that the city, I will be very surprised if they agree to stick in through the second phase of the RTA.
I got another minute. You want to elaborate a little bit more on that? I mean, this putting the half cent sales tax kind of looks like it could sabotage, doesn't it, the RTA next?
Well, it does, but what it also implies is the exorbitant amount of taxes that the city is willing to impose on its residents and those who want to buy goods and services in the city of Tucson. This will put it over 10%. Over 10% in the city of Tucson. It's 6.7 in Pima County.
People are going to go outside the city.
Well, particularly those who want to start a business. Where would you rather start a business? In an area where there's a huge taxation percentage or outside? So it really is a self-defeating issue. And we're seeing taxes being raised not only on the county level with property taxes are going up. The other issue, too, is if I'm the only one on the board that's standing in the way with my colleagues, preventing them from enacting a first-time-ever Pima County-wide general sales tax. That's what they want to do. That's their ultimate goal. And I'm the only one standing in the way because it takes five supervisors unanimously to approve the ability to enact that. I'm not ever going to vote for another tax, particularly one that's never been enacted, a general sales tax in Pima County, and they know that. So there is this very strong movement to raise taxes at all levels.
Okay, Steve Christie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's going to be our midway point of the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Guido is here, UA climate scientist. Lots to talk about right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Now that it looks like the summer thunderstorm season is over, can you think of a more perfect time to head over to Green Things and replenish the garden? Let's face it, we had some really violent storms in July, especially up on the northwest side this go around, and a lot of people were just their gardens. I've heard their gardens were just wiped out from at times ping pong size hail. So, and that'd do it to a garden. So now's the time to go over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road, and any of the staff will get you. Not only, I like to say, you know, you ask somebody, well, they'll point you in the right direction. They'll walk you over on the property to what you need at Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our phone interviews, and of course the live line is always open, but this is primarily an interview-driven show, but we do take calls, and we welcome calls, 790-2040. If you have any kind of comment or question, that's our live line. Presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Zach Guido is with us. We always, especially during this season, try to bring him in once a month. Dr. Guido, Assistant Research Professor at the AIR. I almost said, I did the acronym first. So let me say it's the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. When you think about it, climate pretty much impacts everybody's life almost every day. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill.
So this is, again, serendipitous to have you today. It now feels like, and I think the people in the climate community would agree with me, it feels like monsoon 2024 is in the rear view mirror.
I'm ready for it.
Me too.
I think you're right, though. Like, it, I sort of noticed a shift about 10 days ago. Mm-hmm. It's been quite quiet recently. I think we're, you know, this is the time of year historically in the monsoon where, you know, we're way past peak monsoon season. That happened sort of early-ish August, and now we're sort of on the descending trajectory in terms of, like, one of the metrics is just how much moisture is in the atmosphere. And we sort of, you know, we're trending around average right now, which is, it's just, based on that, it's just much harder to generate storms. We get a little bit of the cooling in the morning and the evening, which is quite pleasant. And, you know, now for the rest of the monsoon season, what the National Weather Service sort of defines as the season up until the end of September, we sort of look toward tropical storm activity in the East Pacific. And, you know, it's not uncommon for there to be, rain events in September. It's also not uncommon for there to be none. You know, I looked at the data this morning, and I think, you know, since 1946 at Tucson, I think there'd been like 8 years in which there'd been less than a trace or close to a trace of an inch or less, zero. So it happens. And so we'll have to see, I think. I guess if we looked at, like, the big picture and tried to put, a description on the monsoon season, as we talked about last month, the defining feature was really the early onset.
Oh, yeah. And mid-June,
we had moisture contents in the atmosphere that were higher than they were this entire year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think for Tucson, generally speaking, the moisture of available to generate storms was for the most part above average.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a bit of rain in places. Like July, for example, was sort of the hot month. Not literally hot month, but also figuratively. It was the wet month, much more so than August. And then if you look sort of around the Southwest, you know, Tucson had more rain.
Phoenix, the metropolitan area was pretty dry. Fewer events there. Around Flagstaff and Prescott was another hotspot area for precipitation, and then the Four Corners area. The monitoring up there is a little bit sketchy. So just looking at some of the maps, there was quite a bit of rain up there, at least what those few stations were showing. So, you know, by and large, like, it's kind of hard to put your finger on and classify the monsoon, but it's kind of averagey,
mm-hmm.
sort of what I've settled settled on.
Yeah, and there were some dry pockets up near Safford. They had a very less than productive season.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, a lot more area than not is dry, and that's typically the character of the monsoon season. So, you know, you're lucky, you know, you're lucky if you're in an area where there's been, you know, above average rain, and, you know, the chances of that happening tend to, you know, favor the high elevations and, you know, south, east Arizona for the most part.
I've talked to a lot of people who are now dreading our summers, not just for the heat, but they're dreading because the wind factor has changed, at least the past couple summers. These storms come down from the rim, and they're so wind-driven that you're getting the microbursts and the hail. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, I think it would be really hard to sort of pick out patterns.
We kind of touched on this last month about my contention was the intensity level is changing. I think that's the overriding.
You know, my take then, and it still is now, and I've sort of had other conversations, is that it's just really hard to find, you know, patterns in time that would sort of corroborate that. Like, I did go back, and there was one study looking at sub-daily precipitation intensities at a, like, really dense network in the Santa Rita Experimental Range, you know, in southeast Arizona. And, you know, they had, I'm forgetting the exact data, but maybe 60 years of record.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some indication that really intense storms, like hourly accumulations, you know, have in that area increased through time. But, you know, it's also when you look at those stations, there's also quite a number of them that aren't showing any trends. So even at that small...
But a few of the stations are backing up my contention.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that is true. But, you know, like, what we would really need to interrogate that is a very dense network, particularly for precipitation, which is so spatially variable and along time series, and we don't have that. And so what we fall back on is what we do have. And then when you look at the stations with longer term records, there isn't a lot of trends in the monsoon in terms of rainfall, in terms of things like thermodynamic profiles, like that may cause like the intense microbursts or and those kinds of things, the hail. It's a hard thing to puzzle out. I will say this though, that there certainly has been a trend in temperature, and that is the one thing that is fairly discernible and robust. And, you know, we saw it again this year. I think
Phoenix 100 straight 100 plus days.
Yeah, and I think
Southern California 115 degrees right now, and dangerous heat wave in Southern California.
Yeah, so I looked at June, July, and August rankings across a whole bunch of stations in the West. So Phoenix its average temperature was its warmest on record.
Okay.
Tucson was fourth. You know, Flagstaff was the warmest. And then there's just a whole slew of stations, like as you go into Nevada, as you go into Southern California, even up into Northern California, they're all around like 1, 2, and 3. So, you know, it was a really warm season, this summer season, for across the West. And also, like, if you look at the U.S. as a as a whole. I think, what is it? May through July. So May, June, July was the fifth warmest on its record. And mm-hmm. They have 130 years of data there. So yeah, I think the warming signal is much more robust in terms of a conclusion. That trend is
worldwide. I mean, Australia's winter, one of the hottest on records, maybe the hottest.
Yeah, temperature is one of those things. And of course, we're coming out of an El Nino winter last year, and the warm water in the tropical Pacific Ocean tends to, you know, warm up the atmosphere, and there's often a lag. So as the El Nino wanes, the global temperature, right? Because, you know, you have an atmosphere that mixes around. And so the tropical Pacific Ocean, you know, you can see the expression of the tropical Pacific Ocean in the global temperature.
Meanwhile, there's a mystery going on in the Atlantic. We'll talk about that with Dr. Zach Guido. It's what really you're seeing in all the weather community has really, really been following this about what happened. Where did the hurricanes go in the Atlantic? Be right back with Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit qlmc.com to view our open trials and express interest. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. This is the perfect time of year to go to Silver City. Look at that, 79 degrees. I can feel it right now, mountain air, 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. And the mornings, oh my goodness, definitely a taste of autumn in the air when you're into the lower to mid 50s. So it is going to be worth your while to take the 3-hour drive to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. The Gila National Wilderness is right there. What a great time of year to do some hiking. Good time for a road trip anyway, as we get ready here to transition into the autumn. Some very odd things are going on in the Atlantic. Colorado State University predicted this would be a year for record named storms. It just hasn't happened. Dr. Zach Guido with me in studio from the University of Arizona, climate scientist. There's all sorts of theories out there. We're really at a period where going back 30 years from third week of August up to about now, where we haven't had a tropical named storm. Very unusual. This should be the peak.
Yeah, we're headed right into
the peak
of the Atlantic hurricane season. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk about part of this narrative is that coming into the season, pretty much all of the predictions from the people who do this for a long time and are the most knowledgeable about it were, forecasting much above average, some of the highest forecasted frequency of tropical storms, on record. And, that was driven by the expectation, which largely has borne out, by the way, for much above average sea surface temperatures. And we're historically at like unprecedented levels for sea surface temperatures. And that's really the main source of driving these storms. So one would expect then, but there's...
I'm glad you said you changed it to one of the main sources, because that's going to get to the point about Africa.
Yeah. And to me, this is a story, like one of the great things about science and forecasts or predictions is that you get to see when you're right and why you're right and when you're wrong and why you're wrong. They're learning tools. And of course now, climate is very politicized. So
climate change deniers are using this to say, hey, look, there's no issue.
Yeah, like the science has got it wrong. Look, like I thought we were going to have 25 named storms.
Yeah.
So the tropical storm formation is pretty complicated. And just to bring it back to what you said a minute ago.
Mm-hmm. Africa.
Yeah, Africa. So why then have we had a relatively quiet Atlantic season? Let me just put that in context first, though. Up until this point, there's, the 1991 to 2020 period tends to see about 7 named storms. We've seen 5. So that's below average. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, that this is the peak season, going to the end of November, for example, there's maybe, another 12 or so that come about. So there's still a lot of time, for hurricanes to form. That's one thing. But then the question is, okay, so we expected there to be a lot more than average at this point, or more than average at this point, and why? And so there's a couple different factors that people are pointing to that may be causing this. One is that the position of these easterly waves coming off of Africa has shifted further north for some reason, and that is entraining dry air, and it's entraining dust from the Sahara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one reason. Now, we know that the position of those easterly waves are further north,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's observational. Mm-hmm. Another reason is that the temperature profile in the atmosphere has lower environmental lapse rate. So that is to say that the temperature change as you go up in elevation in the air is less because warming is happening more in the upper atmospheres relative to lower atmospheres. That reduces the dynamics. So in our monsoon season, really high lapse rates are more conducive for convective storms. The same thing with tropical storms. So there seems to be not as steep environmental lapse rates in the sort of the main development area of the hurricanes and tropical storms. Another factor is the wind shear seems to be a little bit higher this year. And we talk about wind shear because if you have too much of the wind shear, it can rip the formation of the storms apart even before it's before they begin. So there's these and other factors too that really are part of the story in addition to the very, very warm sea surface temperatures. So, you know, we'll have to let the sort of diagnostics play out. And we'll have to see, you know, for the next, 2 months, what the frequency of storms are like.
Well, we actually have almost three full months left to go. If we go up to the season ends end of November. Yeah.
That's correct. So I was looking at the historical frequency and September and October are sort of the peak months. So, I mean, it is a story that, is drawing a lot of attention. But I'll go back to what I originally said. I think this is an opportunity to figure out why, if in fact it plays out that the forecasts were, you know, overestimating, you know, why? What were the reasons? And we can take that as an opportunity to learn. Now, forecasts in the past have been wrong as well. So it's not a definitive sport.
And shifting to the other side, the side that's closest to us, the Pacific, we had three hurricanes just lined up that did impact the Hawaiian Islands. Tons of rain on the Big Island from one of them. I don't remember which one, but now that was odd. Three hurricanes within 2 weeks.
Yeah, and most people actually don't know because it's not talked about as much. But the Pacific experiences more hurricanes in the Atlantic, and it's the season starts a little bit later, sort of goes to, you know, early November, and yeah, for us, right? They often these storms they form to our south when they're under easterly trade winds, right? Mm-hmm. So their natural trajectory is headed out toward Hawaii, or it's sort of northeast of where they're northwest of where they're forming. Mm-hmm. But at this time of year, as you know, the winter is progressing, and the sort of high pressure system is sagging south, you can get the westerlies that these storms can flow into, right?
As they move, which pulls the more on a straight northerly direction, which would impact us potentially.
Right. So as they're moving northwest, they cross over from the easterlies to the westerlies, and then they start bending back toward the U.S. And that's how we end up getting some remnant. They're not tropical storms usually.
They're remnants, and we may not. We may see, hopefully, I don't know, I don't want to say anything about hopefully, we'll see what happens because might get a little more rain.
Right, so this brings me back to the Atlantic. Like, this is actually a good thing, right?
It
like
is.
That there has not been a really vigorous, violent, you know, Atlantic hurricane season because, you know, hurricanes destroy lives.
Of course, this is a nice pause. Well, leave it right there. Dr. Zach Guido, thank you, and we'll see what's going on when you come back in a month. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
On behalf of Zach and Tom, on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.